Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. You may already know that, but just in case it's your first time or you just dropped in here somehow, nice to meet you. We're going to sit together for 10 minutes and we're going to start soon. So please take your seat, get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front, or a chair or the couch, all of which is equally spiritual. And I know I say this at the top of every video, and I've been making these videos for 10 years, y'all. I can't believe it, personally. Anyway, that's not the point. And if you're in a hurry and you need to skip ahead to the meditation, please do. There's a time code in here somewhere, so you can just jump right to that, because that's the important part. Nonetheless, before we sit, I want to continue in the personal vein. As I've been doing for the last few videos, for whatever reason, telling y'all stories about my personal life as a practitioner. So I want to take this opportunity to tell you a crazy story that probably was the first in my adult-ish life experience of having a spiritual insight. This was a long time ago, way before I was a Buddhist, and I've been a Buddhist for more than 30 years. So before that, I was a cocktail waitress at a nightclub here where I'm right now in Austin, Texas, called Antone's. Shout out to Antone's, Austin's home of the blues. It's still around. It's still good. It's great, even. Thank you, Antone's regulars and people who love it and keep it going. In any case, live music every night. The most incredible blues music one could ever hear. And I am not exaggerating. All the greats of that time, late 80s, early 90s, everybody played there. Albert Collins, Albert King, Otis Rush, James Cotton, Jimmy Rogers, John Lee Hooker. I could go on and on. It was great. And I just, whatever, I somehow got there. And they hired me as a cocktail waitress. And on one of my nights off, there was a great show happening. And I knew I wanted to go to that show and I didn't have to work. So I wanted to get there early and get a seat where I could really see. This was an epic reunion of two incredible musicians, neither of whom you've ever heard of. I could tell you that right now, probably. But they made records together in the 60s. And then one of them moved to France, which as a 6'4" or so black man artist, it was a very smart thing to do. In any case, the other guy stayed, his guitar player named Matt Murphy, Matt Guitar Murphy. If you've ever seen a Blues Brothers movie, he's in there. And the other musician was named Memphis Slim. And he was indeed lived up to his name. And he was a piano player, like a barrel house piano player. And as mentioned, they made music, they made recordings together, and then they broke up, as happens. And they hadn't seen each other or recorded together in probably 20 or 25 years until they were reunited on this stage in Austin by Clifford Antone, may he rest in peace, who cajoled and convinced and worked hard to get these two guys who weren't quite sure how they felt about each other on the same stage. Anyway, it was a big deal to people who love this kind of music. And in Austin, that happened to be and still is a lot of people. So anyway, I get there. I'm excited. I sit in the dance floor was rows of chairs because that's how many people wanted to come. There was no room for dancing. Everybody just wanted to hear them. So I get a chair somewhere on the dance floor, seating area, and I take drugs. I'll just tell you that straight up. I took ecstasy, MDMA. It was the first and the last time I ever did that. And I'm like, well, I'm among friends. I know everybody here. This is exciting. Okay, I'm gonna take drugs, y'all. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, well, no, I don't feel that different. Nothing's really happening. The show's about to get started. People are still pouring in. I see people I know. I'm like, oh, they're so and so. I love them. And then I see someone else. I love that person too. Then I see people I don't know. I'm like, well, I love them too. And my ecstasy, my mood, my joy, quiet joy, just kept amplifying. And then the musicians took the stage, and it was like there was no difference between me and them in terms of my feeling of blending with the music, of hearing it really deeply. And I love music and I still hear it very deeply. And I think it was incredible. I everywhere I looked, I was filled with joy. And then I had this, then we'll get into the spiritual part. I had this sort of intuition or this insight. I'm going like this because I had this insight that there was like an antenna coming out of my head, not really, but some sort of awareness was emanating from me constantly to check for danger, to check for threat, to check for harm, to check for a lack of safety. And no matter what I was doing, taking drugs, listening to music, talking with friends, that antenna was working. It was look trolling everywhere, on alert for things that might harm me. Oh, I never noticed that antenna before. And thereupon, I immediately saw there was a second one. And also trolling, but not for harm. It was trolling for joy in a very particular way, not like, oh, I hope I'll be happy. Maybe there's something or someone here who can make me happy. Sure, that too. But while this antenna was looking for signs of danger and then explaining them away, well, no, that person's not actually going to harm you. No, that door always sounds like that when it closes. This antenna was explaining away opportunities for ecstasy in a similar fashion. No, that's not going to make you happy. No, that's not the source of joy that you think it is. No, that's not something to open to. It might make you crazy. They were both doing the same thing, but only one called it fear and the other called it hope. And they were constantly active, whether I was awake or asleep or on drugs or sober. So when I saw this in my mind's eye, although I didn't have words for it, like I do, like I'm making up now, they both dropped off. And there was no more trolling. There was no more looking for anything. That was amazing. I stopped looking for things to be afraid of, and I stopped looking for things to make me happy. And in that moment, and I think it was a moment, in other words, not a lifetime or a day even, I breathed for the first time. It felt like I took a real breath in and out, free. So that was well before I became a Buddhist, as mentioned. And of course, I thought about it and then I stopped thinking about it because, time moves on and so on. But as I became more committed as a practitioner of the Dharma, I saw that this was not a personal insight, that it's true for you too, and me and everyone and all sentient beings. So not just human beings, but all beings are on alert and pushing away. And that's a full-time job. And if we're lucky, at certain moments in our life, we stop doing that and catch a glimpse of something else. So, meditation practice, of course, which we're fixing to do, is not about trying to make that happen, because that would push it further away. Rather, it's about working with what your mind is doing, which often I would say trolling for this or that, hope and fear, and letting go. Not to find relief or wonder, maybe that's egolessness, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, I don't know. But to just come back to right now, this breath, this music, this reunion of greats, this experience of what I see, what I hear, what I smell, what I taste, and what I touch, because the sense perceptions are always in the present. You cannot see something in the past or the future. You cannot taste in the past or the future, and so on. So when this trolling stops, perhaps what we are left with is are the sense perceptions. And I have heard it said, I don't know if it's true, but I heard it, enlightenment enters through the sense perceptions. So I've thought about that a lot. I don't know if it's true. Sounds like it could be. But this is my only clue from my personal experience that it actually could be true. That when certain aspects of hope and fear fall away, that is what we are left with. And they're always in the present. And enlightenment is equated with being present completely. What am I about to say right now? Don't take my word for that. Or anything. Think about it yourself. And let's practice. Please establish your posture. That's where we begin. Sit up straight, but not stiff. You could feel heavy and rooted from the waist down, and light and open from the waist up. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. They're just resting. This is actually a mudra. It's called Resting the Mind Mudra. Let your belly relax. Let your shoulders relax. The mouth is closed, but not clenched. The breath is natural, in and out through the nose, meaning just normal breathing rather than a technique. And if you have a cold, adjust, but otherwise, just breathing in and out through the nose. The eyes are open, and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. And just let your eyes rest on a particular spot. Doesn't matter what it is. Relax your brow. Feel your body breathing. That's what we're doing here. We're just letting attention rest on the breath, feeling the inhale and the exhale, and then again. So, feeling the breath is different than observing the breath, and we are feeling. Let your mind be as it is. Let your mood be as it is. Your feelings as they are. They all come and go. Doesn't make them unimportant, just makes them transitory. But what remains to focus on is breath. That is happening. That continues. So if you notice that you become absorbed in thoughts or feelings or whatever, no problem. This is to the point that you've forgotten about your breath. Not any thought or feeling, just you spaced out. Okay. Notice that. Don't just brush it away. Notice that you're thinking. In this case, feelings and moods are called thinking too. So you just label that moment silently thinking, i.e., not breath. Let go and come back to this breath and take a fresh start. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. Don't do what I did. Thank you for practicing together. It's important. Your practice matters. And while we're here, let me just close by saying, if you want to do something to help the world and its craziness, and I expect that you do, please think about becoming a meditation teacher. Our teacher training program starts in January. The details are here somewhere. And I honestly, no BS, can't think of anything more important right now that you can do, that I can do, than to teach others how to work with their minds and their moods and their hearts and so on. So, something to think about. Thank you.